It's time for Eco Talk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Eco Talk. Glad to be joining you live with a new edition of our program. Lots to talk about today. We're going to revisit one of our recent guests, one of our favorites, a very inspiring man. As a renowned explorer and the first person to travel by dog sled to the North Pole without resupplying, Will Steger has a deep connection to corners of the earth few of us have ever seen. Today he's calling in from Baffin Island in the Canadian Arctic, where he is traveling to see and hear how the climate is changing from the locals' perspective. It's all part of the Will Steger Foundation's Global Warming 101 project. From someone who has seen it all up close and personal, we'll talk to him in just a moment. Then NRDC will check in with Bill McKibben. Of course, regular listeners will remember that Bill was on Eco Talk just last week, but we want to do even more to make sure that all of you, all of us, are aware of the role that can be played in Step It Up 07 coming up this April 14th. In our second half, Sharon Rowe of Eco Bags will help us celebrate this week's announcement that San Francisco has rid itself of plastic bags, or at least has begun the process to do that. It is yet another example of the city's commitment to sustainability. That commitment is actually spurring business innovation like Eco Bags. We'll find out about yet another new green opportunity. First, want to check in with Will Steger. He is doing some amazing things up there in the North Pole. How you faring, Will?
Pretty good, pretty good. Yeah, we've had a pretty good travel last 6 weeks, a lot of adventure and great communities, great people that we're meeting along the way.
And have you had any problems in terms of the conditions, or is that about what you expected?
Well, we expected that the season would be about, you know, a week ahead of time. In other words, the weather we're seeing right now is May weather, and we factor that in our traveling. So we're experiencing spring right now, which is kind of good weather once in a while. Storms, weather starts shifting around, and a lot of great high adventure out on the land because of all that.
Okay, so let's stop and rewind. You're saying the weather has changed noticeably. It's 2 months ahead of where it should be, and presumably that is because of climate change?
Yes, the weather is about a month ahead of what it usually is, and it's pretty predictable up here. Springtime, that you're a month ahead, and you just have to factor into that when you're traveling. And you get earlier springs, and the snow leaves the land earlier. And so we're basically traveling a little ahead of time here to accommodate that changes.
Okay, so it's a little more pleasant or less severe as far as your team and your experience of it is, but obviously it's disturbing on another level, and that's what you're there to do.
That's what we're doing. We're not only here to observe for ourselves, but we're traveling with three Inuit hunters in their 50s, 60s, some really respected elders of the culture. And we're also talking with a lot of the Inuit people in the villages that we're in to get their perspective, their eyes and ears of what they're observing here with climate change. And it's really quite dramatic. It's very commonplace. Everybody talks about what they call climate change up here. And basically what we're seeing, what's happening is a community of Broughton Island that I'm on right now is on the Atlantic coast of Baffin Island, and the community here relies on marine mammals to make their living for their food. But the sea ice, with the ocean warming, the heat from global warming is absorbed, a large percentage of that is absorbed in the water. And that is reflected now in less strong of a freeze up or less ice in general. And this is affecting their transportation and also their food, their harvest of their food.
Do they feel pretty helpless? And, since they're not causing the, CO2 emissions that are triggering climate change, we are, those in the urban areas, and, of course, not just our country, but China and other great polluters. And they're just up there trying to live their life. How frustrated are they? How concerned are they? What do they want to see happened?
The Inuit people up here are just great people, and they're very easygoing people. They have concerns. I mean, they're not really angry for the United States, but they don't understand why the people in the United States aren't making some changes to prevent this from happening, because they feel, they're suffering from it up here. But they have concerns because you imagine their entire culture is upside down. relying on the ice, which is to a large part it's totally changed up here. It's dangerous out on the ice hunting. These are people that their knowledge is passed on traditionally, orally. They're very intuitive. And because of all the changes here and the storms, there's been hunters that have been lost in many of these villages. A small village of 900, you lose four or five hunters in 2-year period. I mean, that's a major loss to the community. And the rules of the games has changed. It's a different climate, and they've made the wrong judgments because of the changing climate and got themselves into storms on the ice or when they're out fishing in boats in this cold water. You know, real tragedies like that. So they really have lost a lot of people up here, considering the population and the culture itself. You know, the elders. The pathetic thing about it is, a lot of the elders are just afraid of going out on the ice. They just don't go out anymore hunting, and they teach their children. You know, word of mouth. They teach them about the conditions, but they can't even teach the children because the conditions have changed. Like they say, everything is changing. And so everything's upside down. This is ground zero of global warming. I mean, it's a place that's changing rapidly, but you have a culture that relies on 80% of their food from off the land. And when the ice changes and they can't obtain that, it's a major problem.
So is when, you know, someone else or someplace else is the major cause and they're feeling the effects first. And this is exactly what we've been told to expect from global warming and, you know, low-lying areas, the impoverished corners of the earth, feeling it first when they did least to contribute to it. But I guess there's no just lamenting that. What are we going to do about it? Since your project is Global Warming 101, what are the takeaway lessons that you want to give our listeners and anyone who is participating in your tour? And I imagine you're speaking to students, classrooms around the country.
Yes, so first of all, people, if they want to check out our website, it's globalwarming101.com. That's one word, globalwarming101.com. A lot of solutions, follower expedition, there's a lot on that website. But first of all, I think we have to see that global warming, first of all, is real. It's affecting real people. And one main reason of doing this expedition is to bring the stories down to the people of the United States. And, in fact, we're going to Washington, D.C. in June to testify both in the House and in the Senate. And I feel by putting a cultural face, a heart-to-heart, you know, face on global warming, it really reaches people. A lot of us are confused by the science, and it's real easy to cherry-pick science and confuse people with it. But when you're dealing with cultures, culture to culture, people catch on to this. But in our everyday life, I think there's a couple things. One in our own sphere of influence, since global warming is caused generally from the carbon dioxide from heating buildings, transportation, electricity, anytime you turn on a switch or turn your car on, you're making a decision. And by making some changes in your life, fluorescent bulbs would be the easiest thing you can do, but that would change you. It should save you three-quarters of your energy bill in lighting right off the top. You would also reduce a lot of carbon dioxide. I think where we're going to see our changes is in when the community gets together, when often you feel isolated, alone. I did years ago, but now more people are involved. The more you get involved in community action, there's a great rallies going on April 14th. I heard you mention that event. But by getting together with the community and local people, it's a great opportunity to first of all, meet new friends and find people with similar interests. But by acting on a socially, more of a social level, it's very helpful. But I think we have to impress upon our elected officials, too, that this is real and they need to represent the people more. I think their people are coming around on this, but both Republicans and Democrats, both, I think it's important that they represent us in this. And then by making this a popular issue, I think we're going to see some big changes in Washington, I know, in the next couple of years. This is very hopeful, but I have to keep our eye on the ball. We have a very short period of time, less than 10 years here, to make some very radical changes here in the way we burn energy. The best side of the story is that we have many solutions. We have the technology, and, you know, if we can put a person to the moon in the 60s in 10 years, you know, getting a car that gets 80 to 100 miles to a gallon in 7-8 years is not a big challenge for the American people if we have the political will to do it. Yep. And we have things like cellulose ethanol, organic grasses, coming on board here, which is a great thing for the economy in Midwest. But
we need
all
to step
the
it
ethanol
up.
In the world isn't going to help us here unless we have cars that get much better mileage than what we have. So it's a combination of the ingenuity, technology, new advances here. And all of this is the best thing for the American economy. So I think I see some hope in that. And the reason why I'm working so hard on that personally is just to, you know, see that there is some solutions here underway for global warming.
Bill Steger, thank you so much for your great efforts and for putting a face on this climate change crisis. So those of you, few out there who don't believe Al Gore and thousands of scientists, this man is telling us what he is seeing every day up there in the North Pole. We'll be back right after these messages.